All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this very Irish Saturday, September 24th, 2016. Pleased to be joined in studio by Steve Goldman, good friend and partner here. How you doing, Steve?
Very well, thank you. It's a raw day out, and unfortunately can only play nine today, but I'm going to give it my best shot and give you my best effort.
Well, as I say, nine is better than none.
That's true.
All right. A little Irish outside, a little cold and damp, but very Italian on the radio. We've got Matt Ginella and an Anthony Scorsia, so we're...
I got to change my name.
You better change your name. Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Yeah, we're doing all right. Talking with Golf Channel's travel correspondent, Matt Ginella. Matt, thank you for joining me, and thank you for being the longest-standing guest of the On Par radio show.
Nice. I like this. It's got a nice ring to it.
It does. Yeah, you've been you've joined me every year that I've been on, and so I always appreciate your time. I know you have a quite the busy schedule that everybody's jealous of, but we always appreciate that you take some time to join us here on Long Island.
How long has it been, by the way?
6 years, my friend. 6 years.
Wow. Yeah.
Yep, you were here from year one, so...
Do you need me to leave or something? You guys want to be alone? That's all right. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I prefer some nice background music.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have to get my engineer on that, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Matt, you know, I wanted to start with... we'll eventually get to some travel stuff. I know you're the man of all things travel, golf, but... just wanted to get, I don't get a chance to talk to you much about Ryder Cup and some other stuff like that. So let's start with the Ryder Cup and, you know, and forgive the long question, but it seems like this is as close to, you know, we have this wraparound season, which is a little insane, to be honest, that we never know what year it is and season it is, so to speak. But I feel like this is as close to, let's say, football as with the Ryder Cup in terms of discussion and you know, discourse regarding the team and the makeup of a team. I mean, we don't have a transfer window like soccer has. We don't have a trade deadline like all other major sports. We don't have that off-season discussion because, well, we're always in season and it's not a team sport. Is the Ryder Cup the one opportunity for golf to act like the NFL and the people to talk about it?
Well, I think in the sense that it's a team event, you know, so it's 12 on 12, and in the sense that it's only every 2 years, and in the sense that, you know, the U.S. has become now the underdog, even though talent-wise, we're always the favorite, you know, competition-wise, we've become the underdog, and it's one of the great, it's the best thing we've got. It's when it feels like the players put all the individuality aside and it's not about the money and it's 3 days. See, normally in golf we only get sort of reaction on day four, you know, in the last couple holes.
Right.
Is the only time we get this sense of, you know, kind of win or go home drama, you know, and you only get a couple players competing for that, for the trophy. But with Ryder Cup, it's those points are happening, you know, every day and twice a day for two different sessions, for the first 2 days. It's not football, but it's the most electric atmosphere for the most amount of days, for the most amount of moments, with 24 of the best players, you know, 24 of, you know, there's probably 20 of the best players in the world.
Well, because I love the match play aspect because, you know, even though I watch the tour on a fairly regular basis, you know, if it's a Saturday and it's moving day and, you know, they show up a graphic and they say, well, you know, Brant Snedeker is 4 under par, you don't really know where that is in context with the rest of the field. You know, how far behind is he? You have to wait till they show you the leaderboard and whether he's on the leaderboard. But in match play, you see it right there on the screen. It says one up or one down and who they're playing with and who they're playing against.
stroke play is always, they're just jockeying for position. You know, they're jockeying to make, they're trying to make the cut, and then they're trying to win the tournament. If you care about a guy making a cut, you get a sliver of a sense of drama on Friday. And if you care about, you know, who wins the tournament, then you get to, you know, you get to really sink in on Sunday and to watch that back, you know, the last nine holes. But that, yeah, it's the Ryder Cup is, you know, there's a reason why we have all the discussion and all the pomp and circumstance. And it, a lot of people get annoyed by all the discussion and come on, let's just start the match. You know, for me, I just, you know, once it's over, we have to wait again for another 2 years. So I love everything. I don't get discouraged by any of the conversation and any of the, you know, and we've got task forces now, and Europe has got to be sitting back and just being like, this is awesome. We've got them on the ropes. They are so consumed by, a flaw in their system and, you know, going back to repeat captain and who are they going to pick and why, and the practice rounds and their sessions to try to see who gels with the chemistry. Europe just takes 12 guys and goes out and beats us. That's what they do. I mean, they just play good golf. They play loose. They play together and they win.
Yep, absolutely. And I guess part of that, you know, parallel, the NFL Ryder Cup parallel is that discussion you speak of, and a big part of that discussion is who's going to be on the team, and that's what fills the web pages and the back pages and of sports sections, and it just seems like this year, I guess because of the and maybe I'm off historically, it just seems like this particular Ryder Cup, with the omission of, or at least the immediate omission of Bubba Watson, this discussion has been just so heightened, at least on the American side.
Yeah, well, it's not necessarily the omission of Bubba. It's this last man in. It's the sort of the transition into let's take a guy really late in theory to try to get one, you know, the hottest player not already in, and if that's the theory, that's the, you know, the method to the madness. The odd part will be if they don't actually take the hottest player not already in. You know what I mean?
And so
we've got two more rounds and we're gonna see how this all shakes out, and a lot of people are feeling like Bubba's a lock, but I mean, if you watched him putt yesterday, that doesn't look like a lock to me. I mean, I just don't, and I'm kind of tired of seeing Bubba miss a lot of putts and the expressions he makes when he misses putts and how he reacts and the look over to the caddy.
Well, the fact that he just gives up on them as soon as, I mean, it almost seems like his stroke isn't even finished and he's already given up on the putt that he's not going to make it.
I really hope I'm not watching that during the Ryder Cup. I just don't enough, you know, again, if you're going to change the system and you're going to have the task force and this is going to do something to try to improve, the United States situation. Well, then do it, but don't just go with the same guys. You know, if you're not taking Justin Thomas or if you're not taking Ryan Moore at this point, to me, then why did you do all of this stuff? Why, you know,
well,
come on, guys.
I feel like I was a, in the beginning kind of thought that he was going to be on the team just because he had bought into the Olympics and they try to take care of people who take care of golf and all that stuff. But when he was the person left off, at least if this is part of the plan, being that is he so emotionally unstable as a human being, you know, if this is part of the overall plan, why leave him out? Why would it be him being the last one in and not somebody else? If you know how unstable emotionally he is.
I don't know, you know, his instability in, as far as emotionally, as, you know, I'm just looking at his putter. You know what I mean? I'm just looking at him missing a lot of putts, and that to me, more importantly, is sort of the issue right now. And Jim Furyk's got so much baggage. And I love Jim Furyk. And we know he's one of the greats that play the game. But God, he's not that good at the Ryder Cup. He's not good at Ryder Cup situations. So I'd have to say, Jim, I think you've had your chance. And thank you for all that, you know, that you've done. You left it all out on the field, but it's time for somebody. It's time for someone else. And I keep thinking if Ryan Moore doesn't fit this bill of,
yeah,
of being the last man in. And by the way, Ryan Moore has got a great match play record.
Sure
Ryan
does.
Moore, I would like to take a guy who just goes about his business. I mean, Ryan Moore is the least flashy player, you know, on earth. Perfect. He's also playing really good golf. Put him in.
Yeah.
Let him go grind, and he can play with anybody. I mean, he's just going to go out and do his job. That's all. That's, and he's never complains. He never pouts, and he never puts it on his cat. He just does his job.
Well, Matt, also the theory that they only have one rookie on the team as it stands, that there's a push to maybe get another rookie on there just so that they have some sort of bonding experience when they go to the Ryder Cup.
Sure, sure. All of that.
The other thing that I've been wondering about the quote-unquote Billy Horschel rule, like a guy's got to shoot 63 on Sunday or else he's not going to make the Ryder Cup. I'm wondering if that's almost going to backfire because there's such a quick turnaround. I mean, the Tour Championship isn't going to end until, like, what, 6 o'clock on Sunday. Then right. Davis Love makes his pick, and all of a sudden the guy's got to get on a plane and go to Minnesota. And then 3 days later, there's the opening ceremonies, and then let's tee it up. I'm wondering if that kind of, you know, emotional turnaround is not necessarily conducive to players that are extraordinarily schedule-minded.
Well, it's a really good point, and it's something I was thinking about. Like, shouldn't they have just named the guy right before the Tour Championship, you know, in that off week to say, all right, now just go, just, you know, do what you need to do with the Tour. By the way, there's a lot of pressure to Tour Championship already. I mean, it's playing for, you know, $10 million. And now these guys that are playing for $10 million, they're all they can think about is the Ryder Cup. There's the handful of the guys that are involved in the Tour Championship who are obviously dealing with a pretty immense amount of pressure to try to make the Ryder Cup. And it's kind of this collision of pressure. And then you come off of that and, oh, by the way, now you got to put on the red, white, and blue and go win it for the country. I mean, it is a lot. I mean, whoever does make it is going to have had to bid through quite a bit. So I kind of feel like you can back it off just a few days and name it just before the Tour Championship, because I think we kind of know who's hot, and just let him go play. I mean, Sean O'Hare, as far as I'm concerned, just put his name in the hat. The guy came from, you know, he was whatever he was, what, 121, and now he's playing in the Tour Championship. Technically, he's pretty hot.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, nobody loves a good conspiracy more than I do, and I was starting to think during this whole process that maybe Davis Love's already made up his mind, and he may have already told the person who's going to be on the team, and he just hasn't announced it.
Well,
I mean that's a pretty big lid to keep on it, because, you know, if I was picked for the Ryder Cup, I don't know if I'd be able to keep my mouth shut for a week or so. But like I said, I can't imagine how this is going to play out and be successful. But then again, you know what? Golfers are fickle people. You know, Phil Mickelson can only hit one fairway, you know, on a Thursday round, and maybe he just lights it up in the Ryder Cup. You know, some people are just like that.
Yeah, and we're going to have to find out. And, you know, that's why all this is so much fun. I mean, I'm you guys are getting me pumped up right now. I'm waking up on a Saturday after a week of morning driving. I'm thinking, you know, and now I'm getting all jacked up again. I'm actually just arrived in Atlanta. I'm going to go out to the golf tournament today. Just as a fan, I just can't wait to go out and just simply watch these guys play and deal with all that is that they're dealing with. In addition to this Ryder Cup stuff, but, you know, by the way, the Tour Championship. It's fun. It's great. This is a great end of the season.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we're going to get to our first break. We're talking with Matt Ginello. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org. Is your inspection due? Are you tired of listening to that noise your car is making? If you're looking for a reliable shop to service your car, try A1 Action Auto for all your car service needs. A1 Auto is a New York State certified shop, and owner Ed Terabiel has over 25 years of experience. A1 Action Auto is conveniently located off Sunrise Highway in West Islip, so pick up the phone and call A1 Action Auto at 631-321-4242. That's 631-321-4242.
All right, we're back in studio with Steve Goldman, and on the line is Golf Channel's travel correspondent, Matt Janella. All right, Matt, you're at the Tour Championship, and just your thoughts. I mean, just it was a nice segue from the Ryder Cup, even though our Ryder Cuppers in the Tour Championship aren't particularly playing very well. But your impressions thus far halfway through the Tour Championship?
Well, you know, you want the hottest player in the world. It's obviously Dustin Johnson.
Sure.
And it, you know, he's always been what was touted to be one of the most, you know, talented players on tour, one of the most athletic guys on tour, talented players on tour, with all this kind of hope and promise, and he's now kind of fulfilling a lot of that this year in particular. And, you know, we heard from Claude Harmon this week on Morning Drive, his coach, and talking about how they've really worked on his wedge game, or he's worked on his wedge game, and how he's, you know, if you take a guy with like Bubba's length and Zach Johnson's wedge game, then you get that's a pretty powerful combination, and that seems to be what you have with Dustin Johnson. He's got to marvel at the golf he's playing right now, and that's sort of what my plan is today, is to go out and just watch him play. I mean he's fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not only his wedge game, but his putter has just been insane in the last couple of months.
Well, when you hit the ball that close to the flag on a regular basis, the putter gets really good.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
I remember asking when Rory was at his peak. I've said this a couple of times on the show. When Rory was at his peak, I was working for Golf Digest, and I was going to meet with Graham McDowell, and they said, ask Graham McDowell, you know, what makes Rory's iron game so good? And so I asked Graham, and Graham said, well, that's easy. It's his driver. if I hit my driver that long and that straight, my iron game would get really good too. So when you ask how guys' putter game gets so good, it's because they're hitting it that close.
Yeah, absolutely.
Matt, one of the things that sort of really ticks me off about the PGA Tour in general is how they go to a golf course and they alter its makeup, construction, whatever it is. The holes are out of order. They use different holes, whatever it is. The thing that I love about East Lake, and you got to, I mean, look, I'm just a guy who loves the game. Can you explain to me why it's so taboo to have a par 3 on 18? Why it has to be changed? Because to me, there's nothing more dramatic than standing over a tee box, you know, whatever it is, 185, 200 yards, and you got to make that one perfect shot because maybe you're a stroke down, you got to make birdie. To me, there's nothing more dramatic than a closing par three.
Well, Pasta Tiempo, one of my favorite courses in the country, public course in the country, Alistair McKenzie design, ends on a par three. Congressional used to, in 1997, the U.S. Open,
right.
Ernie Els, that tournament, that course ended on a par three. You know, I think it was a little more norm back when, before TV golf became so prominent. And I get what you're saying about a one shot to try to make a birdie, but you know, at East Lake, that hole, the 18th, wasn't lending itself to a lot of birdies, mostly bogeys. And to end a tournament, given the state of the game and what we're used to in terms of dramatic finishes and you know what we've seen the last couple of years from, you know, Scottsdale and Travelers and Sawgrass, the kind of the modern stadium golf approach to the game, and then I just think that eventually that idea of winning with a par or bogey gets run over by the idea of a reachable par five or a birdieable par four, or some sense of a fun finish, you know, fun being, you know, guy, the best in the world making birdies, you know? And So that I just think that that's the thrust of the shift in what we're seeing here at Eastlake.
And when you go to a par five, I think you parlay the one shot, the drama of one shot into really possibly three shots, because you have the second shot in, the eagle putt, and then obviously maybe a birdie putt. So instead of it being the drama of one shot, you have sort of drama of three shots, I guess you could say.
Well, yeah, and you got the tee shot that hopes to set up that shot,
right,
that allows them to go for it. So you got the tee shot too. I mean, you know, that tee shot is like, oh, where does that go? And then where does the approach go? And then where does the putt go or the chip go? You know, it's, you know, this is just welcome to sort of TV golf. And like the tour said, and Reese Jones said to me this week on Morning Drive, which was, you know, volatility. They wanted more volatility, and not just to 18, but to 17 and to 16 and to 15 and to 14. And that's really what you have now. Two very hard holes in 14 and 15 when they play the 15th from 210 yards, which is what they'll do, you know, for both rounds of the weekend. And then you've got then you've got these birdieable holes all the way in. So, you know, I guess we're going to have to wait and see if what they did works, but every indication is that that's going to be the case.
Do you like the way the golf course is set up in general? I mean, that we all saw that shot of Phil Mickelson coming out of the rough, and it's fairly thick. Do you like the way they set up the golf course?
Sure, and I'll probably get a better sense of that, and I would be able to give you a better answer after I kind of really walk it today. You know, and really kind of see it. But yeah, I think, you know, it's been a long year. You know, I don't think we want to see these guys really grind. You know, I do want to see some good scores and some good shots and some birdies and some eagles. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the end of the year, and we are rolling into the Ryder Cup. And so, yeah, I it's just kind of like at the beginning of the year, you want to see, you know, that's what we love about Kapalua is, you know, those fun, you know, shots and birdies and eagles and reaching that on two and drivers off the deck. And
yeah,
let's go have some fun.
Yeah, I agree. I actually thought, when I was a little surprised when I started to look at the scores, you know, on Thursday and Friday, and I noticed it was like really just the top 10 was under par, and the rest of the field was over par. And I was like, what? You know, because I was at work. I hadn't been able to see the coverage just yet. And so when I saw it, I was like, oh. And then I saw the Phil Mickelson shot, and I was like, I sort of, you know, already had this preconceived notion that they had gone more U.S. Open than sort of fun, and I was a little concerned getting ready for the weekend.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. You know, they also had the week off. You know what I mean? These guys, you know, so coming off of the first round, they weren't rolling right in from another tournament. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll have to see. I'm anxious to see. I know they moved the tee box up on 15 on Thursday, you know, and it played as, you know, one of the easiest holes. I think as they move it back, it'll play as one of the hardest holes, you know. So, I'm, you know, that's kind of the fun of the weekend. We'll see.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about switching over from the professional side to the game of golf in general. And we seem to be very negative when it comes to portraying the heartbeat of, or the lifeline of the golf industry. And we, you know, you can't go, you know, three words without someone saying stagnating and, or something to that effect. I want to go the other way, and I want to say, what excites you about where the game of golf is right now? What gets you excited? I mean, I know we're pumped for the Ryder Cup, but in terms of the general, the real golfing public, the amateurs who really make up the game of golf, what gets you excited about the game of golf?
This revival of municipals. I'm really excited about everywhere I go, in almost every state, in almost every neighborhood of a big tour event, as I've been, you know, occasionally popping in at various tournaments throughout the year. You know, I do a lot of off-course stories away from the course that's the prominent course of the week, and go do, you know, do something off away from that course, which is what I consider my beat. And in almost every case, there is a story about a city reinvesting in their golf course. We saw it in New Jersey. We saw it in Connecticut. You know, we see it in Southern California. We see it in our backyard in Winter Park, Florida. We see it in San Francisco with what's going to, you know, with originally what happened with Harding Park, and now what's going to happen with Sharp Park. I think, you know, we can just keep going around the country, to be honest with you. And
sure.
It's, that to me is kind of the understanding that, hey, you know, let's look at our golf course, meaning the city's golf course, as a park facility. Let's understand that parks are very important, green space, places for people to be able to have access and an opportunity to have, you know, constructive fun out there, in the form of golf. And so that to me is one of my you know, favorite stories to tell. I never get tired of doing it, and thankfully there's a lot of opportunity to do it. I also think this refocus on junior golf is going to pay huge dividends. I've done a bunch of stuff on first tee programs that seems to be, you know, in almost every one of those municipal situations, they also have some sort of first tee program attached to it. And in every case, you got these great mentors who are telling great stories about real organic growth of their first tee programs. You know, it's a big, bad world out there. We don't have to, it takes us 4 seconds to turn on the TV and realize that all the craziness that's going on. And I think there's more emphasis on trying to get kids into situations that are not that, you know,
right.
To get them away
sure.
from all that and get them into something constructive. And, the nine core values and the idea that first tee is really growing good people and good golfers is fantastic. But you also have things like youth on course that's spreading across the country. It started with the Northern California Golf Association. It's subsidized green fees for kids. It's caddy programs for kids that also put money not only in their pockets but into a savings plan for college tuition. This youth on course is now in 12 different states. The one thing that really upsets me, you really want to get me fired up, is the lack of contribution from something like the USGA, a governing body of golf, who tells the youth on course and Northern California Golf Association, we're not really going to get involved until you become a national program. It's kind of like the cart before the horse. You know, they're telling them, we won't get involved until what? Why wouldn't you get involved to help them become a national program? So that's a real big frustration for me from the USGA. You know, the USGA to me is a big frustration. Seems to me the last 5 years, all they've done is push people away from the game with rules changes, rules, controversy, and, you know, the anchored putting stroke. And instead of, I want to read more about what the USGA is doing to grow the game. And
sure.
That's not happening. But back to the positive, I think the Solich Caddy Academy that started in the Colorado Golf Association, Common Ground in Denver, there's a lot of these programs, you guys, and they're working. They've got a bright future, and there's more kids playing the game. Every course I go to, I see kids playing the game, and they're all shapes, sizes, colors, ages, genders, and it's awesome.
Yep, absolutely. Matt, we're just about out of time. I just wanted to thank you for getting up early and joining me this morning. Really appreciate you being a part of the program for this long, and it's always always a pleasure to talk to you.
I love it. It's always been a blast from the beginning. You always ask great questions. You're as passionate about the game as I am, so thanks as always for having me on.
Absolutely. All right, Matt, be well, my friend. Take care.
Take care, buddy.
All right. All right, that's Matt Janelle. We'll be back in 1 minute, 30 seconds to wrap things up. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week. Enjoy your weekend, everybody, and make sure to go see your local professional and your local club fitter. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.